Hi, I'm Robert.
I am Jared.
And this is What We Really Thought, our favorite films of 2012. We saw a lot of movies this year. Or you say, Django Unchained is one of my favorite films of the year. It's excellently written, you know, directed, acted, the whole shebang. It's got some ticks in there. Yeah. He's clearly working out some issues with his new editor and was cutting a lot for time, so that could be part of it too.
Movie could have ended up with some of those ticks even if she had been there to edit the movie. Just because when you go from like a 3 hour and like 40 minute movie to just trying to trim it down as best you can, 40 minutes is a ton of movie to trim down.
Oh, yeah.
You know, made clear by the fact that there are some characters in the movie that clearly had been meant for other things and just were not used.
Yeah.
You know. Because I did recently get to read, went back and read Devin's review, as he said, like, it's one of those rare movies that is really long and you want more of the movie. You know.
It's also amazing in the way that it balances tones.
You know? Yeah.
It has a lot of comedy, great action, some quick bits of serious drama,
yeah,
along with the very serious subject. Background.
Yeah, subject, just period. Yeah, like...
of slavery and racism.
Yeah, like all of the, like, outrageous, likely violent moments are, like, basically just ripped straight from real stuff that actually took place during the time. Like, that's the most shocking parts of the movie, are, like, just, like, talking about real, like, horrifying things that happened, like, in the course... Like, some of the most, gut-wrenching parts where I was like, I had to almost look away from the screen, were like just like moments of like just stuff like that's how it happened.
Yeah,
you know,
it's
like
shocking
that
our history was like that.
Yeah, exactly.
It's,
and that's
true.
That's probably the one of the more awesome parts of the movie, in a movie that has like a ton of like really awesome stuff going on.
Did you see that Sam Jackson interview clip?
No, I don't think so.
It's very interesting. It's one of the ways Badass Digest articles,
okay,
with Sam Strange,
yeah, that's
put
probably
up.
Why I haven't.
There was some interviewer who wanted to talk about the N-word controversy, and then Sam Jackson's like, "What word? Not? No? Nothing? What word?" He's like, "You know what word I'm talking about? No, I don't know.
I don't."
He got to, and he refused to talk about it unless he would say the word.
Yes.
So then the guy's like, "I wouldn't say the word. I mean, it'd just be bleeped if I said it. I mean, you can say it. No, I'm not going to say it. It's a whole different thing if I say it."
That is spectacular.
And the guy's like, "Okay, I guess we're going to skip it." I guess we are. It was a great question. It's not a great question if you can't say the word.
That is the interview in and of itself, like in a nutshell.
Then right after that, he's like really testy with the rest of it. I'm like, yeah, I can see that.
That's awesome.
Can't tell if he was trying to be funny or not, because it can play either way with Sam Jackson.
It might have played both ways, too. Like, might have been like he was just, like, joking with him to begin with, but then, like, as the interview goes on, it just genuinely pissed him off. Like, really, guy? In a movie about horrifying things that were done to black people in history, you're going to talk about the N-word controversy?
That's this movie, I think, is going to open some doors.
Yeah. It has to, because, like that was one of the parts that I enjoyed the most, was, like, it was almost like a whole new, like, scope of, like, history that everyone had been so afraid to talk about that no one wanted to actually get, like, into the nitty-gritty of it. You know, and, like, this kind of blows the doors off it, and kind of all bets are off now. To a point. I mean, that's still a wound that is still very fresh, and but, like, he did it in such an almost elegant way, which is real fun to say, considering, like, how the movie plays out. But, like, he does it in such an elegant way, such a perfect way, that it has the opportunity to broaden that horizon.
A lot of people talk about Pulp Fiction as Tarantino's best film.
Mm-hmm.
It's when he really solidified his style,
mm-hmm,
but I don't think that's going to live on like Django is.
No.
his style combined with the subject matter is going to make it last a long while, I think.
And it is awesome how almost effortlessly the style and the subject matter blend with each other. Like, there's no moment of, like, getting into it and then all of a sudden, okay, now I'm into the world. It is from the beginning moments of just the shock of going on, it is already melded and perfect. It's like a perfect unison. You know, it's crazy. And I totally agree. It's funny. I haven't seen absolutely all of Tarantino's work. And like, I always, you know, everybody rants and raves about him. I liked his movies, but I didn't get it. I think it was just one of those things I had to experience for myself. This movie was that me getting it moment where I was like, I get what everybody's always on about. Like I get it. Like, for some people, like, this was that when they saw, like, Kill Bill and they were like, oh my God, okay, I finally get it, you know? You know, like, Inglourious Basterds couldn't be that movie for me, but this definitely could. It was just one of those, like, perfect storms of stuff happening where I'm just, like, completely and utterly blown away by, like, every frame of the moment of the movie that's happening. I guess that's the one I'll move on to next is
Cloud Atlas.
Is Cloud Atlas.
That's one of your favorites of the year.
That was one of my favorites of the year. It was a weird one for me too, because I really liked the movie. But I get the distinct feeling there was a lot of other people that thoroughly enjoyed that movie on multiple scales beyond what I did. Because, as I've seen mentioned a lot, it was kind of like almost a breakthrough and like it
structure.
Yeah, structure. It shattered a bunch of conventions of like movie making in general. It is kind of like this insane whirlwind of a movie that just kind of happens to you because of just the way that it's so wildly edited, like where it just jumps from one part seamlessly into another part. You know?
Yeah, it's essentially 5-6 films in one package.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think the only parts that maybe didn't hold up for me is that there are some parts that are very obviously a little bit stronger than other parts. It's not completely to the film's detriment because they definitely shine, let the parts that are the best shine through than say some of the other parts. But it might just be because some of the other parts are so good and so well done that it becomes obvious that, like, the part on the boat is, like, starting to get increasingly more boring because it's just guys
on a boat. It's the same thing over and over again. There's no change.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, it was definitely one of my favorites. See, it's I think the reason why I was so sure after we had saw Django that was my favorite is because that was the one that, even though it was newer, I knew, like, all of the other movies, like, that I had seen that year were, like, on a sliding scale after I had seen that movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, like, even movies that I really, really, like, loved, that I can still remember vividly in my mind, like, I think we saw Avengers, we saw Avengers at least a couple times. I know I saw it at least three or four times. Like, I went to movies to see that, like, a lot. There's only been a few movies that have been like that. Scott Pilgrim was the other one that was like that, where I just kept going to the theater to go see it. Like, somebody would be like, hey, I haven't seen this movie. We should go. I'm like, let's go. Right now, we're going to watch this movie. I'm going to watch this again, and I'm going to love it for all the same reasons I loved it the first time, and it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, Cloud Atlas is one I'm cool on.
Mm-hmm.
It's... I can appreciate why people like it. I can see why that would affect people in a certain way. It just didn't appeal to me in that way. You know, it does have great actors. It does have some very interesting writing. You know, the editing style is unique, but the tones and the stories together didn't hit me, I guess. Okay.
Yeah, because when we walked out of the theater, me and Jeff were sort of raving about it, and you were kind of...
I was quiet.
Impartial in that moment. And like I said...
The one I liked the best out of that was probably one of the weaker bits, was the comedy
subplot with Jim Broadbent.
I mean, one of the better parts of the movie.
It's not as strong as future Tom Hanks or the sex clone storyline.
It's not as striking. It's not as effective, but it's so much more fun, and it does go a long way to hold that movie together.
It definitely breaks the tension during these other stories.
Really heavy shit in some of those storylines, you know, and because I mean, like the one scene in the future, you know, the basically clone slave thing where it's basically
Soylent Green.
It's the Soylent Green moment of the movie. Like, that is like horrifyingly effective.
And they cut to Hugo weaving in drag or something.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, like that goes a long way to hold that movie together for me, at least. So I mean, I don't know. It was definitely a really bold decision, and I'm really glad it worked out for him. Because again, there was a lot of movies this year that just kind of like randomly broke molds. Like, there was that movie, you know, like, we just rant and raved about Django. You know, when Avengers came out, they talked about that in a big way. Like, that was a huge land. Like, that took comic book movies from a money-making idea to just, like, now it is a standard. It's like, this is what we're doing now. Yeah. Might as well just accept
it. It's the first time they basically built to a big event like that in film.
And like, I think in the back of everyone's mind, everyone assumed it was going to work. Because everyone was like, it's too awesome not to work. It's, all you got to do is just put all the guys together, have them fight a big thing, and then it'll work. But, like, the most pessimistic among us, and I completely understood, were like, they're going to fuck this up somehow. They've got to fuck this up, because there's no way that you could line up something this big.
That's another one that was down to tone, I think, because all those movies had different tones to them. Mm-hmm. Those characters have, you know, wildly different cores.
Yeah, and just, like, and they're varying, like you said, varying tones, cores, even just degrees of how good the movie was in general. You know, like, when you compare, like, say, one of the Iron Mans, which was pretty good, to, like, Thor, where, like, you keep going back to it and going, man, there were some elements about that movie I just did not like. You know, but then you get to Avengers and all of a sudden all that stuff is set aside. Like, it doesn't matter anymore. Like, that was just continuity. That was just context. This is the reason why we were doing this. And it was that, you know, and it was actually, like, the perfect kind of, I'm really glad that they didn't kind of blow all their mojo in one go. It was right to ease us into this idea, because they gave us a villain that felt big enough, but clearly on the cosmic level wasn't the full Monty. You know, felt big to us because we had seen Loki before and we're used to it, but then, like, pull your punches just enough to get us wrapped up. Now you hit us with both barrels. And you almost have to do that. You almost have to treat that just like comic book continuity, because it's kind of like, if you don't ease somebody into it the right way, it all of a sudden becomes this huge convoluted mess that it's impenetrable. You don't want to get involved. and that Avengers could have easily turned into that, you know, and it was a wonderful feat that it didn't.
Yeah. That was an achievement in storytelling.
Definitely. Definitely.
We didn't hit
that
out of the park.
And it was an awesome, one thing I've loved about this year is that it was an awesome win for legitimate good storytelling, like an element that, like, almost like it seems like movie, TVs, games in general is slowly trying to forget good storytelling, you know, for the tropes and stuff. They'd almost like marginalized it to, like, just like a rudimentary part of it. Like, well, we need a story, but why should we focus on that when we've got all this other cool stuff to play with, you know?
So on the other hand, I think there was one movie that really made all that worth it, just relied on tropes, didn't have a lot of storytelling, just focused on, wouldn't it be cool if we did this? That movie was The Raid. I loved that movie. I think that's one of the best action films we've had in several years.
Honestly, if some other movies hadn't have came out this year, that one would probably still be vividly in my mind as like one of the most insanely good, because it still is. Like, that was, I am so glad we went to go see that in theaters. That was just such an epically awesome movie for some of the same reasons that we were like anti-reasons we were just talking about, like how good some of those other movies were. It's just like, it is completely straightforward. Like, they're not breaking any molds here. They are just doing it to the nth degree.
Yeah, it's action tropes done well.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It does show you why tropes are a thing. And it's actually the perfect genre to do it, because it's like one of those ones where they've constructed it, deconstructed it, and again so many times that they have actually like brought it down to a science of how it works. You know how these elements fit together perfectly, so now we're gonna. It's kind of like making a simple dish, but doing it to such an nth degree that it's just mind blowing on how much they get it right.
It's interesting. It's not something I would have thought of, I think, really before this, mm-hmm. at least not often. But it's a movie where the choreography tells you something about the characters. I mean,
exactly.
Mad Dog. In that movie, all of his fights have a brutal edge to it, and that mm-hmm. tells you just more about mm-hmm. this character, about how deranged he is, and what he's willing mm-hmm. to do mm-hmm. to preserve himself mm-hmm. and this little mm-hmm. empire he's part of.
Yeah, exactly. And they go a long way, too, to show that our main character is definitely our main character for a reason. Like, there's definitely a reason why he's the one who has to kind of, like, come through for everybody, but they never give him such an edge that it seems like it's definite that he's going to beat out all of these odds.
Yeah, there's still a question that, you know, towards the end there, is he going to win?
Even though you know the trope and you know how it's going to play out, like, there's a lot of really tense moments, like just the fucking, like, the machete scene where he, like, yeah. like just that shit, like that, you know, like that got like increasingly more and more insanely intense, just because they balance the tension so well in the scene with the characters.
And I don't think I can bring up The Raid without discussing a little bit Dread 3D.
Yeah.
I really would like to do a back-to-back.
I know.
Someday, like,
because it's Dread hard 3D. Too, because, like, both of them, I was worried for Dread 3D because they both kind of had the same plot. And they both do play on the same tropes, but, like, it almost feels like the plot is the only thing they share. You know, other than that, like, tonally, they're almost completely different movies.
Yeah, there's a dark humor in Dread 3D
that was completely absent in The Raid, because it would be inappropriate to put it in The Raid. Like, The Raid is just supposed to be this, like, brutal free fall of a movie. Like, it just, and it keep, and that was another thing about The Raid, too. It kept upping the ante without having to pull out bigger and bigger and more ridiculous stops. Like, it managed to up the ante to where, like, the end fight is literally just an extended choreography of them just brutally beating the shit out of each other. You know,
it,
like,
feels real. That's uh-huh. that's what makes it one of the better action movies, is you can feel the damage oh, yeah. done here. It's like calling back to the original Die Hard, where that's mm-hmm. something that helped make that movie, is he's getting hurt as it goes along. They're keeping that. He's not a mm-hmm. regenerating action hero.
Exactly. You know,
this guy here yeah. gets worn uh-huh. throughout the raid.
It's clear he's, like, on his last leg multiple times, to the point to where he's, you know...
That's why you need two-player mode.
Exactly, yeah. And, like, actually, that was another one of those movies where, like, the sound design, like, where I was so happy we saw it in theaters, because every impact that from the hits...
And stereo surround.
Is so vivid and real. Like, I was on the edge of my seat just because I was just, like, completely blown away by it. I was just like, I felt like he was getting hit. It was insane.
Cabin in the Woods.
Oh, God.
Cabin
yeah.
in the Woods. I showed that to Jeff and Mike, yeah. and they had not seen it.
Yeah, yeah.
And their minds were appropriately blown.
As they should be. Like, that was the fun. That was probably... Among some of the movies that were really fun to watch in theaters, that one was probably, like, the most fun.
Actually.
Just because we both had the same reactions, the appropriate reactions, at the right time. You know, there's the settling into the concept, being really happy when you're like, okay, that is what's going on. And then when it appropriately cuts loose at the end, we're just like...
Yeah,
freaking out, and we're not even like horror guys. Like, you don't even like actually like watch horror for for the most part.
No, not really.
Like, and like we're still both having that same like just insane geek out.
And it was, and you get an extra level of fun by introducing other people to it. Like exactly. All really good things, especially in something like this where there's another layer to it. So yeah. It's like I was talking with Mike, and he's like, "Oh yeah, I just watched this other movie." I guess it's like this, except it's funny. I'm like, oh, we'll see.
I guess it's like this, but it's funny.
Like, oh, this is not just a straight horror movie. We'll see what you think. Then we get to a point where you see the board, and he's like, Mike or Jeff is like, man, why can't they just do a movie where they got, like, all of those? And then, right before she presses the button, I say, you remember what you said earlier about seeing everything on the board? Raise her hands up, and like, 1 second ahead, spoiler.
Well,
three,
here we
go. Two, one.
Shit happens.
Ding!
Yeah. Regardless, like, I think we talked about that, but, like, regardless
of... It's just fun. It's fun.
Regardless of how, like, movie-breaking the concept is, where you're, like, thinking about it logically, like, why would you do that? It's just, like, why would you have that button as an option? And it's just, like, you just cast all that aside of, she has to push the button.
Wouldn't you?
How much of a cock tease would this movie be if it gave you the button and she didn't fucking push it? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It almost made you want more of it to happen. Like, I want even more like B versions of like.
There's a lot of pausing and rewinding in that third act there.
Yes, yes.
That last 15 minutes.
Yeah. Well, like that was like one of the best parts too when they got to like the elevators and stuff. I'm just like, I'm leaning forward in my seat, trying to get a better perspective on all the random shit that's happening. Because like I know that's like one of the beautiful parts of that movie too. Because like when you get to the board, it's exactly that reaction. You're reading, you're trying to catch everything on the board, and you're like. Oh, I want to see the fucking dragon bat. That would be awesome. And then we get to the movie, into the movie, and, like, that's just the whole fucking end of the movie. It almost feels... I mean, like, that isn't the point of the movie, the ending, but, like, it almost feels like... It's a wonderful cathartic release of, like, you get... It's everything you wanted to happen.
You've always wondered, what would happen if we put all these horror icons into
all
one movie?
All those movies happen at the same time. Well... That's what happens.
Yeah.
A lot of people die.
The ultimate showdown of ultimate destiny.
Exactly.
With horror.
Yeah. Yeah. That was probably some of the most fun I had in the theater, like, all year. I got a couple more in mind. I kind of would feel remiss if I didn't mention Ted at least once. There's a gimmick.
But the gimmick doesn't necessarily drive anything.
No. And it's not a bad gimmick, per se. It's, you know, like the whole boy and his teddy bear taken to the logical conclusion, which I don't know if we had necessarily seen that a lot, you know, but, you know, it didn't necessarily have a defining version of it. And I think now we do.
It's another one which I think could have been cut down a little bit more.
There was a lot of movies this year that could have benefited from streamlining and trimming.
It's something where, again, and this, I think, applies to all comedies, it doesn't hold up as well on repeat viewings. Just, you know, the gags are coming. So then you just have to focus on the character developments.
But I will say another comparison between, like, The Hangover and it is that when I go back and I rewatch it, the bits that I do laugh at the same time over and over again were, like, the genuine, like, sparks of, like, creativity of, like, oh, I really liked that one character moment, and that still does work and kind of hold up the more times that I've, you know, the more times I see it, you know.
Yeah.
Because Ted definitely does have that, you know, and I was definitely, like, genuine when I got done watching that. Like, I definitely loved it the first time. I've kind of seen it off and on since, and it didn't necessarily grow on me, But there are the same bits that I laughed at before that I'm still really entertained, like, that they came up with. And they're mainly just focused character bits where they're just the, like, the montage moments of, like, random shit happening. You know, those are the fun, when it's just Mark Wahlberg and Ted just being themselves in a moment. Those are some of the best moments, I thought, of the movie. They're not set up like that. It just kind of happened.
Now, that would have been a fun gimmick. Yeah. Mark Wahlberg and Ted.
not his character. Well, in my mind, when I'm watching a movie, I know they have character names,
but I know.
They're Mark Wahlberg most times. And Mila Kunis.
For most movies, yeah, that's how you feel about the actors. But that would have made that movie legendary.
If they had just...
It's the same jokes, but you know... Change the character.
Now it's this alternate reality where Mark Wahlberg, the fucking movie star, off time, smokes pot and hangs out with a teddy bear.
That would make the opening credits montage even better. Like, both careers rise.
Mark Wahlberg moments and then Ted moments. Yeah, that actually would
Ted in the background of, like Fear or on the set of The Departed.
You're right. That actually probably would have made that one of the best movies of the year. If they just made that one change. Oh, man. I don't know. Yeah, so, like, but, like, I was definitely genuine when, like, I got done watching the movie, and I'm like, when I get to the end of the year, it might not stand out as, like, my absolute favorite-ish movie of the year, but I could definitely see that becoming, like, an instant just, like, classic.
Yeah.
And you don't get movies like that all the time where, like, you get done watching it and you're like, that one's going to stand the test of time, like, where people are going to think about that a few years down the road and go, that's going to be, or, like, when we get, like, 10 years down the road and we're like, talking to people, we're like, oh, yeah, do you remember that one movie that happened? That's going to be one of those movies.
Yeah, I think the gimmick is what may hold it back from being timeless. I think in a decade, the effects for Ted are going to be laughable, maybe. Yeah.
Especially considering what we saw in The Hobbit.
Yeah, comparing The Hobbit's Gollum to Fellowship of the Rings or Two Towers Gollum.
Yeah, the scale down is just ridiculous now. It almost feels like, why did we think that looked cool?
The performances are so great. But
exactly.
That's why.
Exactly.
That's why we thought it was... Because Andy Serkis.
There was a lot to overlook.
That's how I sort of look at favorites. That's something where I would be willing and anticipating rewatching it at some point in the future. You know, maybe not something I want to rewatch over and over, but something, you know, I recall, I appreciate, and want to share. And 21 Jump Street is one of those movies. It had some excellent writing, acting, you know, character work. It had some nice action scenes. It was funny. But it also had some nice character arcs.
Yeah, there was actual character
acting. Yeah. And it happened a couple times this year with this and, well, I didn't see The Vow, but this and Magic Mike. But someone found a way to make Channing Tatum work.
Yeah, all of a sudden. Like
there was also a Haywire this year, which he did pretty well in a small role. Which I don't think you've seen.
I haven't seen it yet. But, I planned on seeing it, but I didn't see it.
Yeah, 2012 was the year where people figured out how to use Channing Tatum.
I'm saying I
can't tell if it's the material or if it's just he's worked long enough that he's finally figured it out. But his early movies, you know, Stiff as a Board, G.I. Joe, can't stand him in that. I can't stand most of that movie, really.
Yeah.
It's basically Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and that's it. That I enjoy out of it.
Yeah.
But they figured it out, and he works really well here, and they give him basically a tailor-made role as the meathead.
Yeah. I think that's where they figured out how he works, is that he has this enigmatic ability to play the charismatic meathead. Because he looks the part, but he has, like, such this, like, kind of, like, charming nature about him.
He has a heart of gold.
Exactly. That, like, you almost want to hate him just because there's that knee-jerk reaction of, like, oh, it's that fucking asshole that I knew from high school. But he's got a heart of gold, and, I can't hate him.
He's really nice if you get to know him, you know.
Exactly. And he just somehow personifies that just by being. You know, and it shows in both of those movies. Like, you know, like, because that's the character he's playing. He's Definitely. That guy that you think you know at a first glance.
Let's see, yeah. It's, and Jonah Hill came back. I mean, he had a few bad movies. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why we honestly expected it to be, like, terrible. Because it's like, think about the formula. It's 21 Jump Street. It's a relaunch of an old drama from, like...
As an action comedy.
As an action comedy. And it's starring Channing Tatum and Jonah Hill. It just sounds like it's ready to tank from the beginning.
Jonah Hill is still doing most of his shtick here, but mm-hmm. he found a way to refine it.
Mm-hmm. And honestly, I think the biggest reason, one of the biggest reasons why it works is because the chemistry between him and Tatum works so well. They honestly feel like friends.
This was, 2012 was a year of long movies. This one was about 2 hours, but unlike a lot of the others, this one, most of the minutes felt like they mm-hmm. belong there. I think they could have cut
that
wouldn't have hurt the movie.
No.
Because they do a good job of keeping character moments in each scene
exactly.
that help develop that relationship.
Exactly. Like, yeah, and even some of the standout funny comedy moments even still work as, like, fun little character moments, like the really obvious, like, trip out moment.
Yeah.
You know, like, that almost kind of defines the movie when you think back to it. You know? Like, even, like, that moment is a nice little character moment for them.
Definitely.
Honestly, I might remember the movie more vividly if, like, Ted hadn't come out and kind of overshadowed it in a lot of different ways. But when you look at the two movies, I think that 21 Jump Street's actually a little bit better of a movie than Ted, and it's just because Ted has a lot of dead weight on it.
Yes.
Lincoln, it's one where it's not a show-off type of movie. There's not a singular moment you can really point to as to what makes it great. It's just the performance and the writing. It's sort of stage writing.
Mm-hmm.
It's personal. Uh-huh. You know, it's filled with stories within stories.
Yes.
But that's what makes it work. It's mm-hmm. getting to know this legendary figure through this one thing he did
mm-hmm.
and the interactions that mm-hmm. pushed that through.
Yeah. And that was probably the part I enjoyed the most about it was a factually accurate kind of like for my generation, you know. I know we've had them before and we have, you know, tons of material about it, but like this is like kind of like a defining movie about it. Like if you want to know the guy, here it is. This is the thing that he did. This is what he had to go through. You know, it's a really wonderful portrayal of him, and it's a wonderful portrayal of politics in general. You know what I mean? Considering how, because we view like the passing of my brain just stopped working.
Time, history, decades.
The amendment.
Oh, 13th?
13th, yeah. My brain just stopped working. Like, you don't know what that amendment is. Stop trying to pretend like you do. We view the passing of the 13th Amendment as something that's, like, so definitively, like, yeah, that's a given. Like, we need to give, you know, we need black people to be, every man is equal, you know. Like, but, like, what we don't get,
that almost didn't happen,
and that there was like extremely stark, like almost borderline legitimate, like reasons why people didn't want that to happen. And it's a lot of stuff we're dealing with now today, where like industry, it's like where like moral standing meets industry and profit, and how easily profit and industry overwhelms morality. More often than not, and almost for legitimate reasons, because you start thinking about, well, there's all these people who have, you know, lives and like, you know, like income that is like specifically reliant on this, but it's like, yeah, but it's slave labor, and actually it's one wonderful thing about this year is that we got Lincoln that came out, and Django Unchained that came out the same year, which almost feel like they sort of work together, because it's like, you got Lincoln where he's talking about the politics, and you've got these, like, almost bored people. It's funny, because there are times where they're almost cartoonishly painted as, like, evil people. Even in a movie that's, like, so starkly realistic as Lincoln. It almost feels like they're, like, cartoony evil. And it could just be the people they cast in the role. I won't lie. You know what I mean? When you just look at them and you're just like, that guy is just an asshole. You know? But it is fun that we got, like, Lincoln, which was, like, this, like, this, like, compelling telling of how the 13th Amendment passed. And then, like, Django Unchained, where it's just like, yeah, that's why. That part where there's two black people fighting each other to death, yeah, you pretty much, yeah, that's why. the one thing, and I think it might be unfortunate that the movie doesn't stand out more to me than it did, I don't think I fully appreciated Lincoln the way that some other people did. Because for some other people, it was like almost like a revelation because of
Daniel Day-Lewis.
And like, but when we walked away from the movie, I was still thinking about other movies that had happened that year. Like, I really liked Lincoln, and I enjoyed it.
You're still thinking about Life of Pi in 3D. Like, exactly. That tiger was awesome! That tiger was
awesome! And, like, I won't lie. Like, that's exactly how it felt. And I think that's telling of just kind of, like, the movie-goer I am. You know, I, more often than
not... You like scale.
Yeah, I like scale.
Large scale.
And I like the big blowout feature maybe more than I like the quieter character study.
That was what we really thought. Our favorite movies of 2012. We have a website and a Facebook page. The web address is wawaseegroup.blogspot.com. That's group.blogspot.com. We're also available on iTunes. Thank you for listening.